I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. PFAS are long-lasting toxic chemicals, often referred to as forever chemicals, that are contaminating drinking water and pose a serious health risk in many communities and on military bases, including here in Bucks and Montgomery counties. They can be found in a lot of common consumer and industry products, plastics, nonstick cookware, water-repellent fabrics, even in firefighting foam. PFAS have been linked to some serious medical risks, certain cancers, thyroid disease, weakened immunity, as well as pregnancy and infertility problems. There is currently no federal regulation of the production or monitoring of PFAS, so some states, including New Jersey, have taken steps to set maximum contaminant limits for their drinking water. Pennsylvania has just started sampling drinking water for PFAS contamination. In February, the EPA announced an action plan to establish national drinking water limits for PFAS, but critics say it's not enough. Joining us is Hope Gross, and she's co-founder of the Bucksmont Coalition for Safer Water. She grew up next to the naval base in Warminster, PA. And Hope Gross, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me here.
You're very welcome. And joining us from Washington, D.C., from the NPR studios, is Alexis Temkin. She's a toxicologist for the Environmental Working Group. And Alexis, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Alexis, let me begin with you, only because I want to make sure that people understand what it is that we are talking about. PFAS are not just one or two chemicals. How many chemicals, I guess, fall under that heading of PFAS?
Yeah, that's a great question, and one that is actually somewhat difficult to answer. I think it's safe to say there are definitely thousands of different types of PFAS chemicals, and there's roughly about 600 that are currently used in production.
And are they all equally toxic, or does it vary from one chemical to the other?
There can definitely be varying toxicities across chemicals, and one of the issues with this class is that we really don't know the safety of all of them, but we do know that a handful of the chemicals in this class are extremely toxic.
Sometimes they are called the forever chemicals. What does that mean from a scientific basis?
Yeah, so the term forever chemicals is really also a play on the really strong bond that's used in these chemicals, and that's the bond between the carbon and the fluorine atoms. And what that means is that these chemicals are extremely resistant to degradation, and they persist in the environment as well as people for a long period of time.
And when we talk about them getting into the drinking water supply, does that come from trash, dumps where these, let's say, a Teflon pot or pan is tossed out? Is that the source or a source?
I think predominantly when we've seen contamination of drinking water, especially at high levels, we know that it can often come from military sites or airports through the use of what's known as AAAF foam. It's a firefighting foam that contains PFAS chemicals and is often discharged into the water system. And then also from industrial discharges. So you'll see contaminated water at sites that are downstream of rivers, usually where you have a manufacturing or production plant that's discharging these chemicals into the environment.
Hope, let me go to you. You grew up literally next door to the Warminster Naval Base. That's just outside of Philadelphia, where you could watch firefighters essentially practice putting out fires with some of this foam. Explain what you saw growing up.
So, yeah, I grew up right directly across the street from the captain's house, and diagonal to his house was the training center. And as children, I was there. I grew up there from age 1 until 25. So when we heard the fire whistles blow, we would run up the street and stand by the fence and watch the fires be put out, as well as there was a nice little football field park right across the street from there. So if we were at a football game or watching a baseball game with the local community, we were standing there inhaling the fumes and watching this happen, and thought it was really a great time and fun.
How close were you?
50 foot.
Wow.
Yeah.
That close. You also, as you have testified to and written about, your family got its water from a local well. That was not unusual at that time in Warminster.
Right. So growing up in 1964, we actually had a private well. We were not hooked up to public water until 1996. So our well was in our front lawn, and basically we lived about 25 feet from the Navy base downstream. When we had storms, there would be 8 inches of rain over our front lawn. We also had a creek that came from the Navy base right into our front lawn. So literally whatever was in the Navy base was in our well, and we were drinking it and bathing it and swimming in it and playing in it.
And it was filled with PFAS.
PFAS and probably 100 other chemicals, yeah, unfortunately. But in 1996, when we were hooked up to the public system, that was one of the top 10 toxic numbers, highest levels of PFAS in that public well from 1996 until 2016 when it was closed.
You have talked about the fact that your family has dealt with cancer. You have dealt with cancer yourself.
Yes.
Your dad died of cancer.
That's right, yes. When I was 25, my dad passed away. 3 months later, I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in my lymph system. I am cancer-free today, thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
But you talk about time, you know, stress, all that. You know, it's really extremely difficult. Finances, whatnot.
You also had family pets who died of cancer.
Right. Well, the trauma of losing a pet is big. We probably had at least 8 different animals, dogs and cats, that died of tumors.
Alexis, let me go back to you. Can we make a kind of a cause and effect from what we heard from Hope, this high level of cancer within her own family? Can we say that's from PFAS?
I'm not sure that we can really make this cause and effect class, but what we know is that in lots of areas where there have been high contamination and there have been studies done on those populations, we see probable links and associations between cancer, specifically kidney and testicular cancer, and other health problems like adverse effects on the thyroid, liver problems, pregnancy-induced hypertension, high cholesterol, and infertility issues. The list has really started to grow, and we're starting to see that virtually all systems in the body can be impacted by these chemicals.
What about your neighbors? I mean, this is Warminster, PA, so.
Right. Well, and I was at the local high school, local grade school. Our neighbor right next door also died of a brain tumor. My father died of the brain tumor. They were within 12 months of each other. I have another neighbor on the other side that has many autoimmune diseases. She was like my aunt. She's still alive today, but it's hard to find the diagnosis. And like Alexis said, there are just things just keep coming up and coming up. And the doctors, unfortunately, I don't believe have the advanced information to be able to diagnose. And that's unfortunate for people like my sister who struggles with many autoimmune diseases. She's got cysts in her ovaries, and every doctor she goes to wants to give her another diagnosis. And it's unfortunate because she has sought medical assistance all over and not getting answers and not getting treatment, and that is, it's hard to deal with and frustrating.
What do you want?
What do I want?
Yes.
I want the class of PFAS to be regulated as a hazardous substance. I want an MCL from federally.
What's an MCL?
An MCL is the
Maximum contamination.
Sorry.
That's okay. Maximum contamination limit.
Right. I have zero. I want a zero. Maximum contamination limit of zero in our state and federally. But I'm hoping that our state can push forward to get this done sooner than I see that the federal government is moving.
Let me go back to you, Alexis. Is zero, is that realistic?
I think so. Unfortunately, just because something may be a non-detect also doesn't mean that it's zero. EWG really supports a health standard of 1 part per trillion for this class of chemicals, and that's based on some academic studies that were done looking at the effect of PFAS measured in children and its impact on immunity. So we saw reduced effectiveness of vaccines. It's also supported by animal studies that show impacts on mammary gland development. And 1 part per trillion, depending on the assay that's used to measure these chemicals, can be below the limit of detection.
one part. And I've seen the goal being something like 70 parts per trillion.
Yeah, so the 70 parts per trillion that you're referring to is the EPA lifetime health advisories for these chemicals. And I think the first thing I want to point out there is that it's just a health advisory. This is a guideline. It's not an enforceable limit by any means. It was basically just used as a way for the EPA to say this is what we think the safe level might be. Since then, we've seen states come out with much lower limits. And we've also seen reports from other government agencies that suggest there should be a lower limit.
There should be a lower limit. What has been the response from Congress? We're going to be talking with Brian Fitzpatrick in just a couple of minutes. You have testified before Congress, Hope. What's been the response to what you have asked for?
There really hasn't been a response, unfortunately. I do believe, though, that Rep. Fitzpatrick and the congressional hearings, there's the House congressional hearings and also Senate congressional hearings right now going down in D.C., and we need to press the DOD and the EPA, the Department of Defense and the EPA, in these congressional hearings, and that is what they're doing. And the EPA and the Department of Defense are dancing around, as far as I can see right now.
We did invite a member of the EPA to come on to join us. They declined our invitation. They did send a rather long and complicated description of what is going on, but they do have this action plan, and I'm curious, Hope, do you see that as at least a step in the right direction?
I think it's a roadblock. I think it's a lot of smoke. I think they are pushing the responsibility onto the state level because I don't believe that they want to do it. I mean, obviously, there's in anything in this world, there's somebody's making money off of this. And clearly, the EPA doesn't have a strong hand to press and move forward because someone's making money off of it. That's how I feel. It's my opinion.
What about the Department of Defense? As you said, you live next to a military base,
right?
Grew up next to a military base. What responsibility do they have?
I mean, they're the polluters. They need to pay. If DuPont, and DuPont has been sued, if DuPont polluted our area, 3M, any private polluter, our federal government would make them pay. Unfortunately, in our situation, the Department of Defense cannot be sued. So they kind of have a gray area, and unfortunately, they are not cleaning up quick enough, fast enough. They're not doing enough, as far as I'm concerned, to remediate the problem that they caused. I mean, we are in we have a double Navy base sites. We have two Superfund sites within 5 miles of each other, and the Department of Defense polluted our water. We didn't put the chemicals there, they did, and we expect them to clean them up.
Let's take a very short break and we'll get back to our conversation. That's Hope Gross. She's co-founder of the Bucksmont Coalition for Safer Water, lives just outside of Philadelphia. Alexis Temkin joining us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C., a toxicologist for the Environmental Working Group. And yes, Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick waiting in the wings to join our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We've been talking about PFAS. These are long-lasting chemicals that our guest, Pennsylvania Representative Republican Brian Fitzpatrick, has called one of the most widespread public health crises we as a nation currently face. His district, Pennsylvania's first, that includes Bucks and parts of Montgomery counties, is home to a number of communities grappling with high levels of PFAS in their drinking water. He co-chairs the Congressional PFAS Task Force and wants the chemicals to be added to the toxic release inventory at the Environmental Protection Agency. Congressman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Also staying with us, Hope Gross, again, co-founder of the Bucksmont Coalition for Safer Water, and Alexis Temkin, a toxicologist for the Environmental Working Group. Congressman, by putting these chemicals or adding them to the toxic release inventory at the EPA, what would that do to protect people like our guest, Hope Gross?
Well, it's really a two-step process. Myself and Dan Killady, who are the two co-chairs of this task force, believe that the EPA needs to designate PFOA and PFAS as hazardous substances under the Superfund Act and also establish what they call an MCL, a maximum contaminant level, under the Safe Drinking Water Act. And the significance of that is I think your guests had previously pointed out, currently there's just an advisory level set by the EPA of 70 parts per trillion. Most of us that have been involved in this space for a long time know very well that the health implications, these clusters of health consequences that are surrounding these military installations, and that's where it first came to light, are not coincidental. This is a substance that we believe needs to be brought to light and needs to be regulated. It is contained in a lot of products. It's not just the firefighting foams. That's where it first came to light with us back in 2014. But it's contained in pizza boxes. It's in makeup. It lines the interior of microwave popcorn bags. It's in Scotch Guard. It's in ties. It's in shoes. It's in carpets. It's everywhere. And I think that we need to make clear that the EPA needs to do its job, and myself and my colleague Dan Kilody have said that if they don't do their job, we will do it for them through legislation.
And when you say do their job, meaning to clean up the drinking water, and as our guest Hope Gross said, she wants it one part per trillion. Doable? Is that affordable?
Well, that's really the debate right now. But what we think the first thing that needs to happen is the residents need to be guaranteed that they have safe, not just drinking water, but also air. So keep in mind, the soil contamination is really the big problem here. Anybody who has a basement who's surrounded by contaminated soil, that's now an air vapor issue. People that have gardens that are growing fruits and vegetables in the yard, it's an issue with that. The first thing that needs to happen is these residents need to be connected to a safe, clean public water supply. And they should not have to bear the cost. These residents did not cause this problem. They shouldn't be forced to pay to fix it. There are, as was mentioned earlier, corporations that made tens of billions of dollars producing this chemical, which was predominantly used in firefighting foams. And firefighting foams containing this chemical could put a fire out in 3 seconds, where it would take water 20 seconds. It was highly effective, but that same effective quality in this firefighting foam makes it very durable in water supplies and very durable in the bloodstream. It sticks around forever, and these plumes travel great distances. So what we are now learning is the scope of the problem is even greater than we had previously realized, that it's not just surrounding the military installations, but now it's going into other regions of my district. In Upper Bucks County, East and West Rock Hill Township have reported high levels. So this is a huge problem.
Is it the company's responsibility, the companies that created these chemicals, or does the military bear some responsibility as well?
Yeah, so that's a good question. The military essentially were facilitators of the use of the product, but I think similar to what we're seeing now in the opioid space, where we're trying to deal with the addiction crisis, you're seeing a lot of the responsibility now being put on the pharmaceutical companies. I think that similarly with PFAS, PFOA, these perfluorinated compounds that are toxic and that are poisonous, we ought to ultimately trace the cost back and the responsibility back to the corporations who made money. Certainly the military installations, the DOD, is responsible for any facilitation and use of that. But we're talking about significant sums of money that it's going to take to truly remediate it. Right now, what's being done, and this isn't even being done completely, people are being delivered water bottles, which is like putting a Band-Aid on a bleeding artery. That is not a solution. The intermediary fix now being offered to some residents is a filtration system. Right. That's not an acceptable option because these filtration systems fail. They have a life to them. Some are carbon-based, some are resin-based. But ultimately, they can fail, and you don't know when they fail. And moreover, if these filtration devices are collecting all these toxins, how do you dispose of them safely? So we believe the only solution, first and foremost, is to connect the residents to a safe water supply. Do not make them pay the cost. Offer health studies and blood testing. And ultimately get to the bigger issue, which is soil remediation, and that's where the significant cost comes in. And the only ones that can bear that cost and that should bear that cost are the very corporations that made tens of billions of dollars producing, manufacturing, and selling this chemical.
Well, let me get Hope Gross and also our other guest, Alexis Temkin, back in on the conversation. You're hearing the Congressman Hope. What's your response?
My response is, in the townships that we live in, the three townships, Warminster, Warrington, and Willow Grove, the public water companies spent over $15 million to deliver clean water to the citizens in those areas. And that was out of pocket. And the DOD is responsible, as far as I'm concerned, to pay that, and or the makers of the chemicals as well. But I mean, we know that in 1972, these chemicals were, there's documents showing that they knew that this chemical was poison.
They meaning?
DuPont knew and Department of Defense knew, and they continued to use it, and they didn't clean it up correctly, and they didn't notify us, the residents, that we were going to be drinking this, and that's how I feel. I mean, it's very frustrating.
Let me get Alexis back in on the conversation. Alexis, I'm curious about your thoughts on what the congressman was just saying.
Yeah, well, I think Hope brings up a really good point in that the toxicity of these chemicals has been known for a long time and essentially ignored, and that has sort of led to the problem that we have now. Something else that I want to bring up is really this idea of turning off the tap and making sure that new PFAS chemicals are not brought to market and not are allowed in production until there is adequate safety testing, which is something that has been absent previously.
Congressman, let me go back to you. As you said, and you know, anyone is in this country is entitled to safe drinking water. But how do you make sure that people living, as Hope does, in a community or of thousands and thousands of people, how do you ensure that the water that they get is safe? If you're not going to give them bottled water, but the water that they get comes from the ground and the ground is contaminated and the filters don't work effectively enough, how do you get them fresh, clean water?
Yeah, I mean, the first step, and this is what we've been demanding, is connecting them at no cost to the residents, connecting them to a clean drinking supply. So, for example, in the Warminster Warwick area, that would be North Wales. Many of them have been connected. Many of them still have not yet been connected, but that connection should be provided free of cost. And the big issue here, and everybody realizes the extent of the problem, the big dispute is who should pay for it, because we're talking about a significant financial responsibility here, particularly when you get to soil remediation, because remediating soil, these plumes travel far and wide. And anybody that is relying on groundwater and private wells needs to be concerned about this. So getting them connected to clean water is the first priority. And then we get at least, you know, that's the short-term fix. Then we need to get to the broader issue of soil remediation. I don't believe that residents should be forced to drink bottled water indefinitely. I don't believe that they should be forced to have filtration systems installed and not have any further remedy. I think that the ultimate responsibility needs to be both the DOD as facilitators, which we have, myself, Brendan Boyle, Dan Kilody, everybody that's a part of this task force believes, but ultimately, when we're talking about the significant financial cost, it can only be borne and should only be borne by the corporations that manufacture these chemicals, because the amount of money we're talking about is significant, and that's what we believe should happen.
And we're talking about billions of dollars here, correct?
Absolutely.
Let me just quickly reintroduce everybody, and that's Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick. He represents the 1st Congressional District here in Pennsylvania. That includes Bucks and parts of Montgomery counties, and he's a Republican co-chair of the Congressional PFAS Task Force, and we are talking about PFAS. These are harmful chemicals. They have been tainting drinking water in the Philadelphia region, also in other parts of the country, found in things like clothing and carpets and containers and cookware and things like firefighting foam. Also with us, Hope Groves. She's co-founder of the Bucksmont Coalition for Safer Water. Grew up right next to the naval base in Warminster, PA, and drank this water, bathed in this water, probably played in the backyard in this water. Alexis Temkin is a toxicologist for the Environmental Working Group. And again, you can join us 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get a couple of callers in. We've got Dory. Looks like Dory from Kempton, PA, joining our conversation. Dory, go ahead. You're on the air.
Great. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a concern that the focus of the PFAS around military base is just a small piece of the pie. As you've mentioned, it's in so many of the products we use. PFAS is really transferred also into farm communities upstream from Philadelphia through sewage sludge waste. And I have a nonprofit where communities like places like Northampton County, where Warminster sewage sludge is delivered, and the communities have been fighting it, but get nowhere.
Wow.
So the big picture is Warminster sludge is contaminated. Actually, PFAS is in every sample of sludge nationally. That's then delivered to our farms and our home gardens, where then our food grows in it. And FDA just came out with admitting that, yes, we're finding PFAS in food. EPA has said in their study in November last year that they can't control this hazardous waste. So I'm seeing, like, the big picture is we need to stop delivering, just transferring our sure. toxic waste to where we eat and drink and live. States like Maine have promptly put regulations on PFAS testing in sludge because their farmers are, their milk was being poisoned by the food that the cows are eating. So when will Pennsylvania do the same thing, put a regulation on testing for PFAS with this municipal waste that's marketed as a fertilizer?
I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Congresswoman, you represent Pennsylvania, but also looking for some federal regulation. What is your response to Dory's comment?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Dory. So Governor Wolf, I know, is advancing, as well as Senator Maria Collette, is advancing state legislation to, I believe, come down to a zero detect, if I'm not mistaken. But what we think is necessary is federal regulation, and that's why Dan Kildee and I have been on many, many news shows saying that if the EPA does not act, we will, because what we don't want is a patchwork of laws and regulations throughout the country. We believe that safe, clean drinking water and air quality, by the way, I think it's important that we realize that PFAS also contaminates air in many ways, including trying to incinerate this stuff and dispose of it, because its deemed value as a firefighting foam was in its durability and how it was durable at very, very high temperatures. That same durable quality makes it very difficult from a disposal standpoint. It lasts for a long time, and it's very difficult to eliminate without simultaneously polluting the air. So that's why this chemical has really been underestimated in its toxicity and its danger, because it's not only bad for health consequences, but it's also very, very difficult to dispose of.
Again, Hope, anything you want to say in response to our caller or to the congressman?
Well, in Pennsylvania, there's a Hazardous Site Cleanup Act, which is supposed to make the polluter pay for the cost of the cleanup. And if we could get this PFAS as a class deemed hazardous, a hazardous substance, then we can start making headway until we get it deemed a hazardous substance. And not just PFOA and PFAS. I mean, the blood was tested. We had a pilot study here in Bucks and Montgomery County, and there are other strains of PFAS in people's blood. So I think we really need to take a look at more of the strains that are showing up in different people and in foods. And that, and what Dory just said, I mean, that article came out yesterday about the food and the milk and the in the chocolate cake. I mean, in their that's packaging somewhat. I mean, it's all different things. It's the feed, it's the milk, it's the dirt, it's the soil, like Ryan just talked about. I mean, the soil, there is 4.5 tons of soil sitting at Willow Grove Air Base right now, covered up with tarps because they decided to dig it up. We were at a RAB meeting last week, which is a Department of Defense cleanup meeting, which we go to quarterly, and one of the heads of DOD stood up and said, you know, we're really sorry we dug up that 4.5 tons of soil. We probably shouldn't have done that because we have no place to put it. So there was no plan to remediate it. You know, they thought they were doing the right thing. This is my impression. This is what they're saying. They thought they did the right thing, but they think they did the wrong thing. Now, what are they going to do with it? And again, the soil is an issue. We plant in it. We grow in it. It's in our covering our basements, so there is air quality issues. What are we going to do with the soil? You know, no one seems to know.
Congressman, let me go back to you, and Alexis, if you don't mind holding on, because I want to make sure that we get back to some other issues that you have raised. But I'm thinking about the EPA. Frankly, the EPA headed up under the Trump administration, and in many ways, they are about deregulating environmental laws and standards. Do you have confidence that they're going to take this seriously?
Well, me and Dan actually met with the administrator a few weeks back. He indicated to us that he does intend to redesignate this as a hazardous substance, which would trigger an MCL. What Dan and I are going to insist on is that it be done in a very, very reasonable period of time, because this has been a problem, as the two guests have pointed out, that's been known for a long time. The inaction is unacceptable. This is a public health crisis, and you know, Dan and I and our colleagues on the task force don't want to hear about dollars and cents when these are human lives on the line. So we understand that there's a scientific process that needs to play out, but they need to be moving as expeditiously as possible, because what I told the administrator, as did Dan, the regulators need to put themselves in the shoes of the constituents who are living in these communities and being exposed to this water and the soil. And by the way, I did see, I'm not sure if it was Hope or Alexis that pointed this out, I was over at the air base and did see that pile of soil that they excavated and intended on bringing it to New Jersey. They thought they had a destination site, and it was rejected because they thought it was too dangerous. So that's just exhibit A of the problem.
When you say deadline, and we're almost out of time here, Congressman, but when you say deadline, what is a reasonable deadline?
They asked for the scientific process, their regulatory process, to play out. They indicated to us by the end of the year. Dan and I are deciding now, in fact, we're going to be meeting today on this, whether that's acceptable to us or not, and whether we're going to move legislatively, because we really do believe that we need to hold our feet to the fire. This is anytime you have a public health crisis, and look at any other instance where we've responded expeditiously, we did not wait an excessive period of time to respond. So he and I are going to be talking through this today.
Well, I appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And that is Brian Fitzpatrick. He's a representative of the 1st Congressional District here in Pennsylvania. And again, that includes Bucks County and parts of Montgomery County. And he co-chairs the Congressional PFAS Task Force. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. Alexis Temkin waiting for more things to talk about after this very short break. She's a toxicologist for the Environmental Working Group. Hope Gross here with us in our Philadelphia studios. And again, co-founder of the Bucksmont Coalition for Safer Water. Grew up right next to the naval base in Warminster, PA. Much more after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and just a recap here, PFAS, that's P-F-A-S, are chemicals found in everyday products. These are long-living compounds. They have shown up in drinking water in many communities across the country, including here in the Delaware Valley. PFAS have been linked to a number of health problems, yet regulating these toxic chemicals at the federal level has proven challenging for a whole host of reasons. Some states, including New Jersey, have been setting their own PFAS limits and rules. We are talking about some of the health risks associated with PFAS, what Congress, what states, what the EPA are either doing or not doing, and what it would take to clean all these chemicals up. And again, joining us, Hope Gross, co-founder of the Bucksmont Coalition for Safer Water, and Alexis Temkin, a toxicologist with the Environmental Working Group. We got a whole bunch of people that want to join our conversation. Alexis, let me go back to you. Are products still being made that have these chemicals in them?
So two of the legacy PFAS chemicals for which we have, you know, most of our toxicity information and what the EPA Lifetime Health Advisory levels were set, which are PFOA and PFOS, those have pretty much been phased out of production in the U.S. voluntarily, although they are still used in other countries overseas. What we're seeing now, though, however, is that there are replacement chemicals that are being used for similar functions that have similar structures and potentially similar toxicities.
And do you, when you look at either the EPA or you look at the federal government, when you look at from a national perspective, do you see the will, the wherewithal to address this crisis?
I mean, the fact that we still have no regulatory standards and no way of enforcing these limits is a huge problem. An example I like to give from North Carolina, where there's actually been a really encouraging collaboration amongst community residents, as well as the academic researchers at universities in the area. They created a program where residents could have their blood monitored for certain chemicals, one of which is Gen-X, this replacement chemical that was used at a Chemours facility near that area. And they could monitor these chemicals. And what they ended up finding was really that Gen-X wasn't necessarily in their blood, but there were other PFAS chemicals for which we had no toxicity information. Wow. But now we have exposure information. And so having been able to try and prevent that exposure from the beginning would have been, you know, the best option. But now sure. we have to look at preventing future exposures. And again, turning off that tap, making sure that these don't contaminate our water supply or our food supply anymore.
But we're talking about thousands of different chemicals. Can we test for all of them?
No. So the way we've typically looked at chemical regulation has been this sort of slow one chemical at a time, which, you know, this is a great example of how that really hasn't worked. So we certainly advocate for treating these chemicals as a class, really, until one or any of them could potentially be exonerated.
And how patient are you willing to be? I'm looking at you, Hope Gross. Well, I mean, in certain ways, you know, you've had to pay a tough price for this situation.
Absolutely. I feel like we are the guinea pigs. We are the people in Warminster, Warrington, Willow Grove. We've ingested this stuff, so why not test our blood? Our area has not had blood testing other than this pilot study that took 234 people's blood. Other than that, we have 85,000 plus community people that live in our area that are just sitting waiting for something to happen. And that's really unfortunate. And while we know that the water is the main method of ingestion with PFAS, that's scary. It's really scary. I mean, we need a state of emergency. That's the way I look at it.
And you're saying, do you think, and we're talking about obviously tens of thousands of people that are maybe in the same situation that you're in, waiting and wanting to have their blood tested?
Absolutely.
So if the federal government said, we're going to do this, or Pennsylvania said, we're going to do this, people would
Gosh, absolutely. I mean, it costs about, I think we priced it out about $600 a person to get your own blood tested. It's really hard to find blood testing in our area for these chemicals. So there's an array of issues. But yeah, if it was available, other states have jumped on this. In Massachusetts, there was an outbreak of this, and within, I believe, 6 to 8 months, they had thousands of their residents blood tested. Our area has just been, Pennsylvania is really slow. And I just want to bring up one other quick point, is that firefighters are also exposed to this. And the numbers are scary for firefighters. There's 67% of firefighters are getting prostate cancer because of PFAS. It's the triple X firefighting foam. They fight the fires with it. I know they're trying to get it out of the fire stations, and many aren't using it anymore. But there's so many people that are affected by this, and so much.
And we're talking about civilian firefighters?
Civilian, yeah.
And obviously military as well.
Right, well, civilian and military, both, right.
Governor Wolf has said, you know, Pennsylvania is just starting, I should say, I think it began last month, just starting to do some contamination testing. Are you saying that Pennsylvania has been dragging its feet?
Oh, Pennsylvania is far behind, dragging its feet. We've met with Governor Wolf personally and in his task force meetings for PFAS. I believe it's been over a year now that we've been hearing that We're going to move on it. I mean, he just came out with this severance tax on fracking fund for $4.5 billion for cleanup costs statewide for PFAS, which I think, it's a crime. Why is this tax money being put to clean up PFAS when the DOD caused our problems? I mean, there's an elephant in the room. Department of Defense needs to take responsibility for the mess they've caused. Instead, Government Wolf is passing the buck on to us, the taxpayers, which I don't believe is fair. So some of this, maybe there's good intention, but I don't believe that this is the answer. This is certainly not the answer.
You're saying really it's in DOD's court.
DOD's court, absolutely.
Let me get some callers in. We've got some comments as well. We've got Larry calling us from Warminster. And Larry, go ahead. You are on Radio Times.
Yes, thanks for taking my call, Marty.
Sure.
This is an extremely important situation. It is, in my opinion, a crisis.
Yep.
I was on the Warminster Township Environmental Advisory Council, which was the first municipal body specifically tasked with dealing with this, and I've been following it for years. I have several important concerns, and the first of all is I'm a Vietnam Navy Merchant Marine veteran. And if I am involved in a fire, I want something on it that's going to put it out fast. I've trained with putting oil fires out with water, and it can be done, but I would prefer, if I'm burning, to have this foam on me. Two things is it is really a national crisis. The price, by the way, I want to correct your guest, is $400 per person if it's done individually.
This would be the blood testing?
Blood testing. You can bring it down below $300 a person plus $25 on a blood draw. I have a list of over 100 veterans that I am raising money, trying to raise money for, to do this. It's been very slow.
You know, Larry, I hate to do this to you, only because we got a lot of people that want to join the conversation. And what I hear you saying is that this is a crisis, but on the other hand, you want fires to be put out quickly. Do I have you right there?
Yes, but that's the smaller part. This has been known for years. I've been to every meeting, and they seem to be concerned. The government seems to be concerned with the soil. I am concerned with the people, and okay. I bring it up at most of the meetings with to no avail, and I would like to see testing of the people done, especially the veterans who are transferred from base to base to base.
I hear
this
you.
Is happening at over 600 bases in the country, 1,000 municipal airports, and God knows where else. This is not a multi-billion-dollar problem. It's developed into a multi-trillion-dollar problem, and that's what the government wants to avoid.
Okay, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. So let me give you a chance. It sounds like you know Larry, or you
Hi,
know
Larry.
Of Larry. Yeah, if you
we
can
know
just,
Larry.
but he's saying this is a people problem, and I think that's it's an important way to frame our conversation.
Absolutely. I mean, that's part of the Bucksmont Coalition's stance, and why Joanne and I have put this together and fought for the last 3 years is just trying to figure out, you know, how can we help and how can we help bring awareness and education and understanding to people in this community who have been basically poisoned. I mean, we've been poisoned. We drank the Kool-Aid and we need help. And you're right. No one is addressing the health issues. And that is very frustrating.
Alexis, we're hearing from people, you know, living here in the Philadelphia area who are we can call them activists, I think it's more than that, who are working hard to get this problem addressed. Is this being repeated in other communities across the country where there are concerned citizens who feel like the government, whether it's the local government or state government or the federal government, are not doing enough?
Sure, I think there probably is. I know, like we've seen, this is a national problem, but it hasn't had a national solution. And so we have seen really this burden fall on the shoulders of communities and states. Something I want to point out is that the CDC does national biomonitoring. And what we do find is that nearly every person, 98% of people, 98% of the samples that they have are exposed to these chemicals. And again, it's a small subset of the chemicals that we know to monitor for, that we know how to measure. There's likely other chemicals that we're exposed to in this class that we don't have good analytical methods for and that we don't have known health effects for. So being able really to establish accurate exposures and correlate that to health effects will really help us understand the extent of this public health issue.
But it sounds like you're saying we don't know. And there's a lot of talk about maximum contaminant limits, you know, whether it's 1 per trillion or 70 per trillion. Do we know what's safe?
Yeah, so based on the studies that we have, the most evidence that we have available right now, that's what those studies indicate, that a level of 1 part per trillion is what's going to be able to protect public health. And we really need to have, you know, something concrete right now. We can't afford to wait for more studies. We can't afford to wait for more evidence. So we have to use what we have at the moment.
Here's a question from Kevin. I'll put this to you, Alexis. He says, my understanding is that PFAS are used in the manufacture of nonstick cookware, but is not present in the final product. Is that true? And I guess people who, cook with Teflon are wondering to themselves, gosh, am I poisoning myself by using these pots and pans?
So we know that the compound C8 or PFOA was previously used to manufacture Teflon, which is a polymer coating. You'll also see that used in cosmetics and some other consumer products. in terms of actually cooking on food with pans and things like that, we're not entirely sure. We know that the manufacturing has contributed to the water contamination, and we know that we can monitor a lot of these chemicals in dust and in homes, which presumably also comes from just their use in either carpets or fabric repellents, things like that. So the general consumer products can definitely contribute to exposure as well.
Wow. Let me get Bonnie from, looks like, Ivyland, Pennsylvania to join us. Ivyland also just outside of Philadelphia. Bonnie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. Good morning, Marty. I grew up about 2 miles away from these ladies. I was close to Johnsville also. The importance of the chemicals there at Johnsville is important. But that area of Bucks County has been a dumping ground for chemicals for years. In seventh grade, when I was, I think it was 1977 or 78, because I was the girl lucky enough to be drinking from the well that had the poison water in it from the industrial park's dumping, I got to write the report about how the industrial parks that surrounded the neighborhood had been dumping chemicals in the ground for years. And you watched, and I watched, and over the years, and nothing really happened. Nothing really changed until, you know, they went city water, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. But other than that, I understand the importance of what they're saying, but I don't think anybody really cares.
Well, you know, Bonnie, yeah, let me just jump in here only because we're almost out of time here, but I do want to give our guest Hope Gross a chance to respond to your comments. And the naval base that you grew up next to is a Superfund site now, right?
Right. Yes. And same with Bonnie saying, yeah, she grew up and I grew up right up the street from Ivyland. I think I'm not sure what I heard you say. I know you said at the end you don't think people care.
Right.
I think that people are scared. I think that people are frozen, and I think that people are in denial. I think that that's a coping mechanism, and I'm not judging anyone. I think for me, at 25, getting cancer and watching my father die, watching the neighbor die, watching the dogs die, watching friends die, I mean, and today at 50, and getting emails like many every week from people. I have stories. I brought some with me today, but there are so many people sick. There are so many people that have passed away. And for me, I want to bring a voice to the people that are not here today. And I also want to bring clean water to my grandchildren and to my children. And until we all jump on board and do just something little, I think we can. You know, it's depressing. Sure, I'm depressed every day when I have to sit and read this stuff and hear these stories about people dying and sick. But at the end of the day, unless we each do one little thing, things aren't going to change. And for me, I'd rather be in action than non-action. And if I can motivate others to help, you know, do one little thing, or just to help in your own household, you know, not buy that popcorn bag, you know, be aware that you live next to a Superfund site, you know. Whatever it is, for me, it's a passion, and I want to help people.
Well, I appreciate the work that you're doing, and I appreciate Hope that you joined us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. And again, Hope Gross, co-founder of the Bucksmont Coalition for Safer Water. Alexis Temkin, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
And she's a toxicologist for the Environmental Working Group. We also talked with Pennsylvania Representative Brian Fitzpatrick, who co-chairs the Congressional PFAS Task Force. And for more information about PFAS, I do suggest that you go to State Impact PA here at WHYY. It's an issue they have been covering for some time now. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.